Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening, thank you for subscribing, and of course, thank you for leaving all your reviews on iTunes. As always, much appreciated. This episode and all of our episodes for the remainder of the year are brought to you by Leo Vegas. Every week, me, Tim, and Phil on the other podcast, Egg Chasers Podcast, go and check that out, give our score predictions for a different game of the week. Go on to leovegas.com, see what our score predictions are, and if you fancy having a go yourself, well, why not? They're great partners and they're currently supporting Rugby Union and, more importantly, Rugby Union podcasts. So leovegas.com, go and find them there. Also, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Jay Beardmore. This podcast is at the Rugby Dungeon and the aforementioned Egg Chasers is at Rugby Podcast. If that's not enough for you, you can also find our Scottish offering, which is the Thistle Rugby Podcast. All things Scottish rugby, great guys. Have a listen, download them, subscribe, do all those great things. Anyway, enough of this rambling on. Now it's time for my interview with Exeter Chiefs' very own Kai Horstman. Enjoy the interview. I'm delighted to be joined by the one and only Kai Horstman. How are you, Kai?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah.
Now, a bit of a strange one for you guys this week, because although I'm sure you enjoy your week off, I'm sure you'd much rather be playing this weekend.
Yeah, so obviously it's the European Cup quarterfinals this weekend, and unfortunately we didn't do enough in the pool stages to get through, so we've had the weekend off. Much rather be playing in a European quarterfinal, I think, but you know, this time of the season, I think you know, we'll take a weekend off, and you know, we've got to prepare for Bristol next week, so rest weekend's not too bad for us.
Yeah, you had a brutal pool in the European Cup.
Yeah, well, you know, I think most pools are really tough, to be honest, but a couple of years running now, we seem to pick Clermont 2 years running, maybe 3 years running in our pool, and they're a real tough side to play, so, you know, especially away.
Yeah.
And in fairness, you know, that we kind of got, we didn't pitch up either, both at our place and certainly away. We kind of, you know, it was a real lesson learned there. I think kind of really taught us a lesson how to play the game over there, that's for sure.
Well, I think that Clermont game, it was almost like a perfect storm, because they obviously want to get one over on you for last year when you had that remarkable result at home against the Ospreys, and everything else went your way as well, I think.
No, so yeah, so we what did we do? So last year we got a bonus, crucial bonus point away from home, and then we had to get a big win. It was a real slim outside chance. You know, we had Ospreys last game of the pool.
Yeah,
we knew going into it, if we get a five point win, then Bordeaux then have to travel to Clermont, and there's a very slim chance that they get a win there because of Clermont's home track record, and Bordeaux didn't really have anything left for them in the competition. So we knew it was out of our hands. So we kind of just did it completely performance based. You know, we wanted to finish on a high, and then, you know, at the end of the game, there was these kind of, you know, we're pleased with that performance. And there's rumours sort of flying saying, well, you know, Bordeaux are leading in a minute, and, you know, we can believe it. So we're thinking, oh, well, is it possible that we go through? And then the message came through, and it was a pretty special moment, really.
Yeah, it was one of those strange things, isn't it? I'm sure, like, Clermont made the wrong decision to go for sticks, or something odd happened.
Yeah, well, so they got a penalty, didn't they? Very kickable. I think it was on the 22.
Yeah,
even closer, and they only needed a bonus point, you see, and they were eight points behind, and Morgan Parra took, so they couldn't win the game anyway. So he took a quick tap, and then they got turned over. So I'm not sure how he went down in the change room afterwards. But they learn from that sort of thing. And this season they look like they've got the bit between their teeth.
Oh, absolutely.
Some of the performance that they've shown have been pretty impressive. So it'll be interesting seeing how they go, because you know it's certainly the latter stage of the competition where they tended to struggle in the past, but. Yeah, they're a class outfit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as we talk about the perfect storm. I mean, they've got all that French size, French money, but it almost feels like they're run in a English-style way. They're one of the few French clubs. And this is not to be too disrespectful to French clubs, but they really embrace the conditioning and the coaching side too, which is quite rare over there.
Yeah, everything was pretty impressive when we went over there. And you know they do seem to have, you know, it's not like just they fling it around and see what they can do. There's, you know, when you study them and analyze them, there's a definite structure. You see patterns to how they're trying to play, and they understand the systems that they're trying to run.
Yeah.
And then they sort of throw in a lot of class into that. So when they're firing and they got a little bit of a rumble on, they're a very hard side to contain.
What were you able to tell about them from your analysis?
Well, just, you know, where, you know, there's certain tells how they're trying to get their centres in the game, and they're big runners. You can just, when you watch a lot of phase play, you tend to be able to pick up you should be able to pick up how a side's trying to break you down or trying to break teams down. I mean, obviously they'll tweak it for certain games, but you can kind of get. Because obviously you've got to do your defense, you know, analysis all in the week building up to it. And you've got to understand how they're going to try and attack you, and where their threats are, so you can defend against them. So you do some, you know, some French sides you play, and you're like, I'm not sure if this is completely off the cuff or what. And then it's a case of, you know, you've got to defend what you see. But you know, especially, you know, Premiership sides, you begin to learn how teams are attacking. And Clermont are certainly one. You know, they score some amazing tries, but there is a definite system there.
Now, I might have this completely wrong. In fact, I almost certainly do have this completely wrong. But I seem to think it was someone from Exeter who said, when analysing Saracens, they tend to have, you know, after six phases, their defence tends to break down. Is that the sort of level you go to?
I don't think so. I wish that it did.
I actually think it was Jack Knoll on BT Sport who said that.
I think, you know, most sides, most defensive systems, the more phases you can put together, if you're stretching them and putting them, you know, a defensive system will weaken when put under pressure. So whether that be, but you know, to say sort of six phases, you need to be stringing six phases together. That is stretching them.
Yeah.
And stretching their defense and testing them. And then when a defensive line is under stress, that's when weaknesses, you know, sort of gaps appear, guys jump out of line, and when guys feel under pressure, that's sometimes when people make mistakes. So that's what he might have been getting at, is, you know, if you can stretch Saracens for six, seven phases and put them under heat, that's when you might get front row tiring. That's when you might get little sort of gaps in their line speed, little, you know, dog legs. But you know, let's be honest, you know, there's a good reason they did the double last year, and that's largely down to their defence, really.
They are an incredible team. I mean, it feels like they're the team, actually, well, the only team that has a little something over Exeter every time you guys meet.
Yeah, well, especially last in the season before, actually. I think we might have done the double on them the season before, you know, in the league. But, yeah, I mean, certainly they... another team that are really impressive, and you know they have a clear understanding and almost mechanical on how they operate, aren't they? You know, you know exactly what's coming every time we play against them. There's no surprises there, because we know exactly how they're playing. But they're extremely well drilled in it, and they're so efficient in how they run it that when they're on song and they're firing, it's sometimes, you know, they pressurize you and they're relentless with it, that it's sometimes very hard to escape. I think, I haven't seen the game today, so I don't know how they got on.
They won comfortably in the end, I think.
Did they?
Yeah, they looked good first half, and then they pulled away quite a lot in the second half. Although I stopped watching with 20 minutes to go, so...
Yeah, no, I mean, now they've got, you know, the likes of, you know, Believer Napola being injured for a while for them, you know, wouldn't have helped them. And, you know, guys away on international duty, you know, they lost a couple of games there, I think. But, you know, when they got their squad back and they got their key members, you know, they're impressive, certainly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, watching him away at Toulon this season, it was a masterclass of how to play rugby.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, you know, certainly the final last year was a lesson for us, and we came out in the second half and had a lot better effort against them. But you know, we're looking to do a little bit better this year, and you know, we're working hard within our camp to, you know, if the sort of business end of the season, we're hopefully somewhere where we can, you know, put on a good challenge against them.
I guess the overarching theme of Exeter over the last few years has been of a club that is continually improving. Can you just talk to me a little bit about how you've improved as a club, the atmosphere which is involved in that process, and also what's it like working with a guy such as Rob Baxter?
Well, how we go about it is to firstly just keep your feet firmly on the ground and to not get too ahead of yourself. So, you know, win or lose, you know, you can A, B, if you have a massive victory, you can kind of get, you know, go away with the momentum. You kind of get caught up in this roller coaster that, you know, the press get behind you. You think you're amazing because you had a hell of a victory.
Yeah.
Fans start blowing smoke at and you think suddenly, hang, we're better than we are. And the key is not to get caught up in that, because it's, you know, weeks are long. It can be a long time. It can be a short time in rugby, and before you know it, you could be on the end of a hiding because of believing you're better than you are. And exactly the same with the loss. You know, you can take it a decent defeat, but it suddenly doesn't turn you into a crap outfit. Yeah. You know, so I think come Monday morning, it's resetting yourself, and the ability for a team to you build up to a game all week, you then try and unload it all on the weekend. Try and get the best performance, you know, and hopefully the result goes your way on the back of that. But then come Monday morning, you've got to reset yourself. And it's the ability to reset on that Monday morning and not wait till the Thursday, Friday before you've shelved that game at the weekend.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important. And then it's, you know, it's the small things, you know, it's doing your one-on-one individual skill work that's going to make small little percentage difference in the game. Mm-hmm. You know, the analysis we do, you know, and then, you know, work under Rob's, well, it's amazing, really. You know, he's analysis wise, he's there at 6:30 in the morning when we arrive at sort of 7:30, 7. He's already in there grafting, and he's there long after we go. So, you know, knowledge wise, you know that you're working under someone who's been watching everything and every fine detail and every bit of training, and he knows the ins and outs of it. And you know, it's just, you know, what you see, you know, in your interviews and things like that, and it's, you know, that's what you get. He's an honest bloke, and he's honest and fair with you, so that's great.
Yeah, I was in one of his post-match press conferences when you guys visited Sale. I think that game might have been the game where you turned it around a bit, because I think prior to that you weren't on a particularly good run of form, and it's just like you say, he was incredibly honest. But also incredibly compelling. I thought, yeah, this is the guy that knows exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah, we actually looked at that game as a key moment for us, because up until then, you know, after the Clermont at home game, we had a good word with ourselves, and we hadn't come out of the traps like we usually do in the start of the season. You know, traditionally we've done pretty well at the start of the season and come out flying and gone well, and results weren't really happening for us. I didn't think we'd played that badly, but we'd lost a few close games, and then it kind of starts sitting heavy on you. And we kind of reassessed after the Clermont game, and we looked at that Sale game, and we thought, right, you know, this is a big moment for us. You know, it's a really hard place to go and play on. I think it was a Friday night we went up there, and we thought, right, let's put a big focus on it, and let's just kick start it, because let's get our own house in order, and you know, we can quietly go around about our business and get our season back on track. And you know, I think we had a complete, you know, squad buy into that, and you know, just slowly we just went about things, just collecting points, and you know, suddenly we found ourselves nicely sat in second, well in the hunt for it. So still a lot of work to do, but you know, certainly from earlier on this season, we've managed to turn things back in our favour.
Now, one of the things which is mentioned a lot about Exeter is the character of the players. I was interviewing Chris Bentley.
Corporate Chris.
Corporate Chris. Likes a bow tie and got a degree in philosophy.
Oh, did he? I did not know that.
Yeah. Educated man. and he was saying that, most of the recruitment process, I'm sure there's a lot more science to it than this, but it's basically on the character of man that you are as much as it's about the rugby talent.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how they do it. I know he spends hours and hours and hours watching footage. All the coaches do, going through, making sure they get the right person. And a lot of times they don't get that person. So they spend a huge amount of time going through videos of possible players. But then he does always make sure that he meets the person and he researches the person, because ultimately, that person's got to be able to fit in the change room. And you'll have to ask him it, but I suspect there is a real element of signing the person first before the player.
Yeah. Well, what was your recruitment process like then?
Before anything was agreed, I knew my agent had told me that Rob was interested, but he wanted to meet me. Which kind of happened. He said, look, we're going to combine it with a medical just to see where we're at. And yeah, so it was pretty much spent the morning with Rob, physio for a bit. And then just sitting down with Rob and having a chat. He took me around, showed me around. He wanted to, it was a very civilized chat, but he wanted to get to know me a bit. And he wanted to tell me about the club, and he wanted to tell me about the ambitions of the club and where it's come from. And what I should expect, should I go there?
Yeah.
And what the club would expect from me. He was definitely trying to sort of gauge whether he could get a relationship with me, I suspect, and whether we'd get on and whether I'd fit the mold of that squad that was there at the time.
So two things from that then. Firstly, what was the club expecting from you? What was that discussion? And second of all, you talk about the analysis and finding the right player for the right role. What was the role that you were brought in to do for Exeter Chiefs?
So he kind of outlined what the kind of the squad's, the bar is hard work, really. You come into work, we enjoy ourselves when it's time to enjoy yourself, but it's because you've grafted. It's all as a result of absolutely ending yourself in training. So by the time games comes, intensity's an easy thing to get to. It's easy to get the intensity levels right up if you've been doing it in the week. So that was kind of the whole basis of it. It was a bit more detail than that. He was signing me as a for back row competition, really. At the time, his brother Richie had kind of nailed down the number eight spot and he signed me for competition in that back row and just strengthen it there. And he just said, look, if you graft hard, if you play hard, and if you kind of learn from what type of back row I want to have here, then you'll get game time. So
yeah, well, I mean, whatever he said, it was clearly compelling because you ended up there.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah.
Now on that and how Rob Baxter likes to set up his teams. One of the things which is truly remarkable at Exeter is how consistent you are and how good you are at the basic stuff. Now, one of the most basic things of all is the pick-and-go game, which you guys are very, very good at. How much emphasis is put onto that tight game?
Yeah, well, I think you find most sides, when they get into the 22, they tend to tighten up and flatten up. We might do it slightly more than other teams.
Yeah.
And that's just that's just a tactic we've employed and been pretty successful at it. But we do play pretty high intense multi phase game, and then you'll find majority of teams when they get into the 22, things become a little bit more condensed and a little bit more direct.
Yeah.
Obviously, defense intensity goes up because you're getting close to your try line. Kind of attack-wise, you have to do. I mean, often things are on out the back, and once you've tightened the defense on, you fly off or call it, and you try and get a little bit of width on it. But they'll only do that if numbers are on.
Yeah.
If clear numbers are on. But I think you find a lot of teams do that.
So, just with that, as with a lot of things in rugby, the devil is always in the detail. And something which seems very simple, i.e. the pick and go, is actually, there's a lot more going on than meets the eye. Can you just give us some examples of what is actually going on when you're training and you're preparing using that tactic?
Well, I think, again, I think, you know, when you are picking and going, you want to get the defence, you want to try and get them sort of honeypotted on the blind side, or catch them all grouped. So the wider you can get on that, the harder they have to work round the corner to get back in a position to defend the next guy who's going to be picking and going, if that makes sense. Whereas, you know, if I don't know what you call your bodyguard, your first defender,
yeah,
and you're picking straight into him, you've taken one guy out of the game. If you just pick game, if you can pick and get to two or three, you know, suddenly those three guys are out of the game, because the next pick, more often than not, is going to be going the same way. So either the outside defense has to compress in, or the blindside defense has to work around. But either way.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
They're under stress, and it goes back to that whole, you need to be stressing defence in order to create opportunities.
Yeah, well, it certainly stresses defence, because when you go through those multiple pick and go phases, it does often feel like just only a matter of time until you score.
Yeah, we do quite a lot of work, and you know, it is harder than it is hard, because teams are very good at defending it. And it's sometimes, you know, if you've got momentum and you've got speed on it, it's a lot easier. But it's when it's static,
yeah,
teams are stacked up against you, that's when sometimes you have to dig in and say, right, you know, this is going to be just attritional graft here. To turn it from ball that the backs don't really want to ball that we're backs are thinking, licking their lips, thinking, right, we've got an opportunity here.
Well, just changing the conversation completely now. You were born, or you're originally from Zimbabwe, is that right?
I was born in Zimbabwe, yeah.
Are you a Zimbabwe national then?
Well, I was born and bred Zimbabwe. I was Zimbabwe national, but then gave up passport to have a European passport. My dad's German, so I had a German passport. And then I came to boarding school over here when I was quite young, and then I would fly home to Zimbabwe every holiday, and then I ended up staying here.
How did your dad end up in Zimbabwe?
Well, he was a doctor.
Yeah.
And he met my mum's South African, and they met in South Africa. He was working in South Africa, and they met there, and they moved to Zimbabwe together and bought a farm, and then had four kids.
Are they still out there now?
Well, my parents are divorced. My dad's now in Mallorca.
Yeah.
And my mum's, we've still got a farm in Zimbabwe, but mum's now in Stellenbosch, just outside South Africa.
Yeah.
Just outside Cape Town.
How easy is it for you to go over and visit Zimbabwe?
Well, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, my mum goes back every sort of 3 or 4 months, probably.
Yeah.
Check on the farm. But I haven't been back in a long time, because, you know, our window of holiday time is essentially June. So usually we try and fit a fair amount in, and we try and get out to see my mum in Stellenbosch, and then go to see my dad in Mallorca, and there's a fair few things. So we haven't actually, I haven't taken the kids up to Zimbabwe yet, but my mum goes pretty regularly, to be honest.
Now, do you ever sit back and think, if Zimbabwe was a functioning country, they would have one hell of a rugby team?
Yeah, no, the whole time. I think, you know, it would be, you know, going just ex-Chiefs alone, you know, we've got Dave Years,
yeah,
born in Harare, Don Armand, born in Harare. I think we might have even all been born in the same hospital. So,
is that right?
Yeah, so so we've got three Zimbabweans, and you look around. The lad who plays for Scotland in the back row,
Denton.
Denton, he's Zimbabwe born. There's a lot of them are playing Curry Cup and in South Africa now.
Mm.
It's incredibly sad seeing.
It is, yeah.
Fingers crossed things can change there, and they can start moving on the upper bed. But it was certainly a hotbed of sport for a long time.
Is there still much rugby being played out in Zimbabwe at the moment?
There certainly is rugby being played.
Mm.
I follow a few of them on Twitter actually. There's a Zimbabwe Sevens team, and there is people out there who are making big efforts to get sport back to get the cricket back on the map and get the rugby back on the map. And it's just, ultimately it comes down to funding, and it's just incredibly hard for them, really, when you haven't got support where you need to have it.
Yeah, and I guess it's one of those things that if you are a talented sportsman, you'll probably just nip over to South Africa. And if you really have what it takes, you can end up being a Springbok.
Well, yeah, exactly, which what the majority of Zimbabweans end up doing.
Yeah.
Because firstly, they tend to go over to university there. Most of the universities down there, they'll tend to go, to Cape Town or Rhodes or wherever. And they end up playing the rugby down there. And then it just makes sense for them to play where the facilities are good. The money's going to be decent for them. It makes complete sense.
Yeah, I often wonder if it'd be possible to put together like a barbarian-style outfit of Zimbabwe heritage players to play non-cap games in the test window or something like that. I think it would be pretty good fun, actually.
Yeah, it'd be a great idea. Be an interesting team you put together.
Oh, it'd be tremendous.
Yeah. Start it, mate. Get it going.
Well, I'll use my minor clout and see where we go.
I'll carry the water for you.
Perfect. Now, you guys are going into the business end of the season now with the playoffs, but one of the things I wanted to ask you today was about the team-building side of Exeter, and in particular your pre-season. I've heard a lot about the Exeter pre-season in the past, and I was hoping you could just give me some details about what you guys do and how you use it to structure your season going forward, not just the rugby side, but also the team-building side.
I think we got extremely good culture at the club.
Mm.
Something that we work hard at, and we enjoy each other's company, we enjoy having a beer together, but going back to it, you can only do that when you've grafted hard and you've put it in, because otherwise they don't work together.
Yeah,
you can't just cruise for pre-season and have great times together and then you just get absolutely hiding come game time. So you know your rewards you get is from a huge amount of efforts that you put in, and they definitely go hand in hand, because you can't, look, that's what I believe, you can't absolutely end yourself during weeks, have massive games and then have big wins and not enjoy those moments together.
Yeah,
because that's what is a huge factor in building a culture. And exactly that in pre-season, we'll look in pre-season and go, right, these are what we've got to meet. These are the sort of sessions we're going to have. These are the targets we're going to nail. And when we nail them, then we're going to have good times together. We're going to organise this, we're going to organise that. And just, you've got to have your rewards. Rob's obviously got a change room together that, we'll get on. We enjoy each other's company, and we love having beers together. From what I can see and what I've learnt from rugby, it's a fairly simple formula.
Yeah.
But you've got to have people who are prepared to do it and prepared to do the hard work before they get the rewards.
So give me an example of the sort of things that would go on in a session where you'd end yourself.
In pre-season, we'll always have, because we're very close to the coast, we'll always have beach sessions.
Yeah.
So beach sessions consist of loads of different stations, essentially, with June running. Ooh. Driving bags, doing line up more sessions up going up dunes, wrestling in the sea, but they're high intensity things, and they're just, have you ever tried running up dunes in sand? They're just absolutely
no.
Lactate build up is just incredibly tough.
Yeah.
But after like a three-week block, obviously hard work on the pitch, and then you finish on a Friday beach session. You get to the end of the block of pre-season, and we would have, you know, it could be anything really, but we can organise, right, we're having barbecues and beers on the beaches, and then we're going to organise to go somewhere else, and then, you know, just so they're just little rewards after a block of pre-season that you break up the pre-season slightly, or you have what did we do last year? We went up to we did like a sort of adventure thing at River Dart country theme park. What is it, theme park? Well, it's essentially pulling tractors. It was cross country running. It was a bit of leadership work in there, and it was a tough day's work. Mm. But and it was at the end of a block of pre-season work, and then, you know, we had an enjoyable evening afterwards. So that's the type of thing.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard of anything that sounds quite so nice, which actually could be quite so horrible.
Yeah, absolute hell. Bizarrely, very rarely do we get a really nice day, but last year we had sort of every single beach session, I think, was sunny, so the beach was pretty crowded. So what's worse is you're absolutely hanging out your ass, and then you got everyone sort of taking photos and gawping you really to kind of and then you kind of see in the local paper yourself looking like you're on death's door the next morning. So
must be particularly odd if you just planned on nipping out to walk your dog as well.
Yeah, it is. I think I'd rather change places.
Now, just tell me a little bit about the Exeter fans and the support you get from the local community. Because it seems like you guys, you're almost like some sort of minor celebrities there.
Yeah, I mean, our support is up. I don't know if you've been to a game at Sandy Park, but it's absolutely class. You know, full buy-in. You know, there's a huge group of travelling support as well. They diehards who come on away games, and they're all, you know, featherhead dress, you know, they're dressed up to the nines, with all the drums, all the various songs and the chants, and, you know, it's a pretty special atmosphere, and there's, you know, which plays a huge part to why the lads love playing at Sandy Park and why we tend to have good results there. But not only that, you know, we can play, you know, our sport when we go to, you know, Newcastle away on a, I don't know, Friday evening, and you can hear them all through the game with the drums going. It's class. It's absolutely amazing, and it's great because, you know, majority of them we see up in the bar afterwards, we're going to have a beer with them, and it's just a really nice rugby club. You know, it's a rugby club that's, you know, moving the whole time, modernising the whole time, but it's kept its core values of what a proper rugby club is, I think.
Yeah, it's got to be said. It's amazing how you've kind of kept, like you say, the core values, but you haven't lost it as you've increased in scale, which is so unusual.
Yeah, it is. I think, well, it's the people you have at the club, and the people in charge, you know, have been through it the whole way, and they know, and they have invested a huge amount of emotion into the club, and they know where it's come from, and they want to keep the good parts of it, which is really nice.
Another thing too, it strikes me, or at least it seems, that Tony Rowe looks like a bloody good bloke.
He's a really nice guy. Yeah, he, you know, he's at every game. He's down with the players in the change room afterwards. You know, all the players have a really good relationship with him.
Yeah, well, you can tell he really enjoys his rugby. That's for sure.
Yeah, he's extremely passionate. You know, he's been at the club a long, long time, and you know, he's just grown it, and he's just the engine behind it. And the energy he's got for a place is pretty impressive. You know, the whole stuff with the cheese, but then, you know, getting the World Cup games to Exeter, and, you know, he's a big driving force for that. So, you know, fair play.
Now, have you been to Gareth Steenson's Lad Garage, or whatever it is that he's got going on over there?
Yeah. So that's the standoff. The standoff is his...
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, the standoff's his pub, yeah.
Nice.
His bar. Yeah, it's class. So the story behind that is a great lad who used to play for us, Brett Sturgis, played for the club for about 9 years. Mm-hmm. He had a kind of like a pub in his garden that he'd built from a shed, and it's called the Grafters, And we used to have a few beers there, especially at the end of the season. You know, you'd have barbecue and you'd always have that pub open.
Yeah.
And you'd have beers on tap, and it was brilliant. And then Stino, when he bought his place, said to Sturge he'd love to do that there and do it in his garage bit. And Sturge went and helped him build that, and he slowly added, you know, he slowly added and developed it, and all the memorabilia, and you know, and yeah, it's class. You know, that he's, you know, he'll always, after the game, he'll always just say to lads, look, standoff's opening at this time if you fancy coming for a few beers.
And that's brilliant.
It's very good. It's you know, he tends to have, he'll always have a fair few sessions during the year there, but always after every game, you know, majority of games, he'll say if anyone fancies it, and he'll get sort of, you know, a handful of lads there having a few beers with their partners and things like that. It's brilliant.
Well, can you pass on a message to Gareth for me?
Yeah.
I think he should rename his bar. I think it should be called the Exeter Cocktap.
Oh, right, okay.
Now,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Now, what on earth is this? So we were watching rugby about 3 years ago before recording our other podcast, Egg Chasers. And you got a very unusual celebration. Where did it come from? What's it about? Yeah. Where's it gone? And more to the point, when's it coming back?
Right, well, it's weird how, I mean, just kind of escalated, as some of these things tend to do. We kind of did it as a kind of testicular awareness type thing.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
As like a, that was kind of the theme, and we just have it, but it wasn't meant to be how it kind of, but it ended up almost being quite aggressive. we had it going for a couple of seasons, and the lads loved it, and obviously we got a bit of press for it, and then we started getting quite a bit of negative press.
Yeah.
And Rob was like, look, and we were like, well, hang on, we said amongst ourselves, said, look, it's kind of getting away from what we originally kind of did it, and it's kind of, so we then, you know, we had a fair few complaints, and then Rob was like, look, I think we're just upsetting a few people here, so let's just knock it on the head. So that's kind of what's happened, really.
I hope it still happens in training.
Oh, training the whole time, yeah. Anything goes in training.
There was one in particular
that's why I score so many tries in training now.
Oh, exactly. There was one with Kerry Sweeney. I'm not going to describe it. If you really want to find it, you can go on to YouTube. But it reduced the three of us to tears. It was absolutely brilliant.
Was it quite intense?
Yeah, very intense. And the evolution of it I liked even more is when you would score and then you get into a huddle so no one could see. That's commitment.
Yeah, well, that's kind of, and then we what we started to do in the early days of doing it, we were like, oh, hang on, so, you know, because you'd watch the video afterwards. You're like, hang on, one of these lads doesn't like cock tapping. How weird's that? And then, you know, because a couple of lads wouldn't come in and join in, so they like, then we'd start bagging them in the week. So by the end of it, then everyone had to be involved in it. So yeah, it did escalate a bit, but excellent. No, we've kind of moved on from there. But that's kind of the story behind that.
Well, I personally hope it comes back, but I think there's also a lot of good logic if it has veered away from what it originally was. Great fun all the same.
Yeah, it was good fun, but I think it definitely, we kind of lost sight of what the reason was for it.
Yeah. Right, so before I let you go, I'm going to need two predictions. You're currently second, you're going to go into the playoffs. So, firstly, where do you think you're going to finish this year? Do you think you can top the table? And who will you play in the final? Because I'm going to assume that you get there.
Right, well, that's a tricky one, actually. We've targeted top two.
Yeah.
So Worcester 5 points above us now, and it's going to be a real tough running. But I'd like to think we can get a home semi. Mm. And I think, I don't know, it's really hard. I think we'll probably end up playing. Now, I'll tell you what I'm going to say. And this is a bold statement. We're going to finish top.
Good.
And we're going to be playing Wasps in a home semi.
Nice. So
No, we're not.
No, because Wasps finished second.
No, Wasps finished third. And who would be Leicester at home with it currently?
Yeah, so you'd have Leicester, which means...
We'll have Leicester, we'll have Leicester at home, which means Saris will be playing Wasps at home in their semi.
And if Saris are susceptible to one team, I think it would be Wasps, actually.
Or Chiefs.
Oh, 100% Chiefs. 100% Chiefs.
Yeah. So, to be honest, I'm not bothered. We'll finish top and then we'll just... We'll take whoever fancies their chances down at Sandy Park.
Yeah, and then just kick on from there. Are you a little bit worried, or is this something you want to get off your back, that if you win, that you'll cease becoming the neutral's favourite and stop becoming everyone's second favourite team?
Potentially, yes, but like everyone loves a little bit of an underdog, don't they? So last time when we were up at Twickenham in the final, it was absolutely amazing because I think we probably had, you know, there's a fair few neutrals there who bought tickets, so we probably had them on our side. So yeah. the noise levels were absolutely unreal. Not only that, you know, we had a good 30,000 travelling from down Devon as well, so that was pretty amazing. But I think you might be right. You know, when you have a team that's, but I think that tends to come off continued success.
Yeah.
So for example, when Federer's won Wimbledon for 7 straight times, you know, on the 8th time, people are like, come on, let's have someone else to win. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, I think that tends to happen after you've, if we win the Premiership 6 years on the bounce, I reckon on that 7th year, people might fancy another team. I hope.
Yeah, well, if you win it 6 times on the bounce, we'll get you in for the record-breaking 6th time for yet another interview. Thank you so much for coming on today, Kai. Really, really appreciate it. Oh, one other thing as well. Big thank you to Peter for setting this up.
Yeah, no, it was great. Good form from him. He loves listening by all accounts, so.
Yeah, weirdly.
makes a change.
Yeah, I don't know many of them. Anyway, thanks for coming on today and best of luck when you get to those playoffs.
Not at all. Safe trip to South Africa.
Cheers. All right, bye-bye.
Cheers, Jimmy. Bye, mate.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.